love his passion for Jesus. I love his strength. I love the fact that Pastor you, Stephen, and you, Naomi, doing a fabulous job pastoring you. Why don't you put your hands together and thank your pastors for pastoring you? Yeah, a little bit more. Come on, a little bit of sugar. I have this whole thing about pastors and church life. Pray for your pastors. If your pastors are grumpy, it's not going to go well for you. If your pastors are happy, it's going to go well for you. If your pastors are blessed and feeling good, it's going to be good for a church, isn't it? If you get ticked off with your pastor, which occasionally you will, pastor will upset you, he'll do something you don't like. The Holy Spirit has a tick removal ministry. He'll just take the tick out and you give it to him, sort it out with him, continue to bless and support one another. Great to be with you. I want you this morning to think about your biggest problem. Don't say it out loud. Don't look at your spouse. What's your biggest problem? Who's your biggest problem? Think about them. Is it someone at work? Maybe it's someone in a sporting club that you're in. Maybe your biggest problem is some study you're trying to get through. Maybe it's a business you're trying to get off the ground or trying to get really happening another level. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe a bit of friction in a relationship. Maybe in a family or a dear friend where things have just fallen into a tough time. Maybe it's some financial pressure. What's your biggest problem? I want you to think about it, and I want you to get it front and center because we're going to see what the Lord can do with problems. Some problems come from the hand of the Lord. Sometimes the Lord says, I'm going to give you a problem. Sometimes God will do that. Sometimes our problems come from the devil. We have an enemy called the devil. Sometimes he'll bring a problem. Sometimes problems just happen in life. Just because of life, life turns up some problems for us. And we've got to face them. I want to show you this morning that God has a solution to your problem. Whatever your problem is, and the human condition is the same for all of us, whether we're here in Australia or in India, different pressures, different scenarios, but they all face problems. Every single human being has problems. If you don't have a problem, please come and see me afterwards. I'll give you one of mine. I'm happy to give away some of my problems and you can bear with them. And I want to take you into the Bible, a story that happened about 2,500 years ago. It's a really old, ancient story, but it's a brilliant story of what God can do with a problem, what God can do with your problem. And I doubt anyone in this room has had this problem as bad as this guy had a problem. So we're jumping into the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 2. Daniel's one of those great prophet books of the Old Testament. And I love Daniel because Daniel's writings occur over about 60 to 70 years. Daniel served in the Babylonian kingdom and empire in Babylon for about 65 years he was involved. And so we can find out at various times through the book, we can kind of get an estimation of how old Daniel is by some of the writings there. Chapter 2, verse 1. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and because it's the second year of his reign, we can actually work out through the book. Historians have worked out for us. Daniel was probably about 18 years of age, probably 19, 18, 20, around that. Young guy, young go-getter. Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, the astrologers, to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I've had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. Then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. That's what you say. If you get to meet King Charles, here's your opening line. May the king live forever. It won't happen, but it's a nice thing to say. It's a thing of honor and respect. It's just a way of saying, you're the king, we're not. May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it. The king replied to the astrologers, this is what I firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. Oh, gee, that's a bit full on, isn't it? Obviously, some anger management issues there King Nebuchadnezzar suffered with. He said, I'm just going to cut you to bits. I'm going to bulldoze your houses all down. Not going to be a good life for you if you don't tell me the dream and interpret it. But if you do tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Wow. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. So he's kind of, this is kind of some really not subtle motivation, is it? Tell me the dream and interpret it, otherwise I'm going to kill you. That'll motivate you, won't it? That'll get you out of bed in a hurry, kind of working on it. And he said also, if you do tell me, then you're going to have great honor and rewards, and I'm a king, I can reward you handsomely. Once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it. Thinking, now this is too hard. You tell us the dream, we'll work out something to interpret it, and then you can reward us. The king's not having this. And the king answered, I'm certain you're trying to gain time, because you realize this is what I've firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. He's getting real paranoid now. You're actually working against me. He's trying to get these guys to help him, but he's really paranoid about them, as well as pretty angry. So then tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me. So the ante goes up. Atmosphere in the room is getting a bit electric. I'd love to see this in a really good Hollywood production, actually. Then the astrologers answered the king. They kind of go, this ain't going to happen. This is not working. There's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. I mean, they're getting really full on now with the king. King's full on with them. We're just going to give him a whack back. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king's ask is too difficult. This is pretty kind of gutsy sort of stuff, isn't it? You're talking to a king here. It's too difficult. Can't do it, king. And I've lost my place in my reading. No king, however great and mighty, has asked such a thing of any magician, enchanter, or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't live among humans. This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. He said, well, I'm just going to kill the lot of you. Which is pretty dumb, isn't it, really? If you're talking to a group of people and you say, I want you people to solve my problem. And I say, man, what you're asking is too hard. I said, well, then I'll kill you. I mean, it's not a great solution to a problem, is it? The guy's just got that red mist, that rage. You know, you've all seen the road rage sort of videos where people just seem to go berserk. They just seem to lose their senses and do stupid things that I'm sure they regret later. The king's going, well, you can't do it. I'm just going to kill a lot of you. We're just sending out an order. I'm going to kill all the counselors, all the people that I've got working for me. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. And men were sent to look for Daniel. Daniel was one of these wise men. And his friends who were with him to put them to death. Daniel obviously wasn't in the audience with the king that they had, where this to and fro went on. The king gave the order to execute everyone. But Daniel finds out about it because we read in verse 14. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officers, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel, and I love this. At this, Daniel went, found a horse, and rode all the way out of Babylon. No, it doesn't say that, does it? Now, I'm an older bloke. If someone was trying to kill me, the last thing I would do is go and see them. Someone trying to kill me, I'm getting a horse in Babylon, I'm riding, I'm heading for the hills, baby. Who's with me? Who's out of town? I'm getting out of Dodge as soon as I can. I'm gone. I'm history. You won't see me for dust. But you can tell Daniel's a young bloke because young blokes do this sort of silly stuff. At this, Daniel went into the king. What? You what? The king's trying to kill you. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time. Can you imagine how courageous is that? That is stunning. You know what? Your problems will never get solved if you run away from them. Your problem, and some problems turn up in my world, and I get that, you know, get that nervy butterfly thing going on in the belly. We all get it, that kind of nerves, and you get a bit of goosebumps sometimes. You go, oh, yikes, that thing. Oh, I don't want to look at that. And we just kind of hide it and put it away and deny it and don't want to look at it. And Daniel had the courage to go into the king and ask for time. He went into the king Nebuchadnezzar and said, hey, king, don't kill me yet. Give us 24 hours. Have the courage to face your problem. Have the courage to look at it. And sometimes, I'll tell you what, over the course of my life, there have been problems that I did not want to look at. I wanted to ignore them, want to deny them, want to put them away, not check them out. And I remember going through seasons where financially, really struggling financially in our lives. And you know when you're struggling financially in your life, you don't like logging onto your bank account. Because it's not a pleasant experience, is it? You log on, you think, my goodness, that little dot is in the wrong place. It needs to be the right. It needs to move to the right a couple of places, you know. If the bank could just move the dot to the right a couple of places, who'd be happier? We'd kind of all be, wow, log on, look at that, baby. The dot's in the right place now. I mean, you do, you kind of, but I've found over the years that any problem you kick down the road just gets bigger. And you still go down the road and there it is. You're still looking at that sucker. A big, ugly, green, jolly problem. Face your problem. Do a Daniel. I love this. And you can tell he's a young bloke. Young blokes would do this. I remember as a young bloke, I'd do stupid stuff like this. Just, yeah, well, let me at it. Now you're a bit older. Oh, okay. After you, sir. Please help yourself, you know. You feel free to go see the king. I'm just finding a horse and I'm riding out of Dodge today. Face your problem. Don't ignore it. You know, people of faith, we look at problems differently. You look at a problem. A person without faith doesn't look at problems like this. But I'm a person of faith. I look at the problem and go, Lord, have you dropped this into my life to do something in me? Then I think sometimes, okay, Lord, if it's not you, is it that jolly devil? Goodness me. My wife said to me a week or so ago, she said, gee, the devil hates me. And she said, I hate him too. Devil is our arch enemy. He's the enemy of our souls who will bring things into our life that we have to fight against, we have to stand against. And other times it's just life. Life turns up stuff that we don't want. And sometimes I think it's just wherever the source of the problem is, have courage. Have courage. Have courage. And Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. He urged them, look at this, he urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. He urged them to plead. I kind of picture the story as Daniel, the young guy, coming into the king's throne room. Hey, king, King Nebuchadnezzar, may you live forever. Give us 24 hours. We can sort this out. Just give us a bit of space and time. The king granted his request, probably thought this guy's brazen, bold, I'll give him his request. And Daniel says, thank you, sir. Probably bows a few times, moves out of the palace. On the way back to his house where he lives with his friends, he goes, what the heck did I just do? My goodness, I just said to the king, we're going to solve the problem. I don't know what to do. The language here is he didn't going to go back and say, hey, guys, we've got a little problem. You know, we could die possibly, you know. Going, but why don't we just have a little, maybe a little prayer meeting or, you know, maybe talk about it or something. No. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven. He goes back and says, guys, we're facing unbelievable, we're facing death. We have to get on our face before God and plead for God. We're going to cry out to God. We're desperate right now. Your problem may be bigger than you, but it's not bigger than your God. And so I have a question for you today. Who's praying for your problem? Who's praying for your problem? You see, Daniel just didn't go in and say, man, I've got a problem. Let it out, King. I'll sort it out. And then he goes off and does his own prayer thing. He went to his friends and said, friends, I want you to pray for this problem. There's something in the humility that when we've got a problem, we actually go to someone else and say, you know, now they don't go to Pastor Stephen and ask him to do this, but we go to a friend, a family member, someone we trust, someone we love, someone who loves us, and say, you know what, I got a little issue here. Could you pray for my problem? There's something in the humility of that I believe moves the heart of God. And I tell you, whatever size your problem is, and we kind of thought, what is our main problem? It's a problem that's smaller than this one, baby. Unless someone is out to assassinate you today, is anyone aware that there's a hit on their life from the mafia or somewhere? Just check the crowd, make sure no one here is going to line up for a bullet. Is anyone got a hit on them? We want to know, because we're probably all going to leave the meeting immediately if someone's out to kill you, because they'll probably take those all out. This problem is huge. Your problem is smaller than this problem. Your problem feels huge to you. It feels challenging. It feels overwhelming. It feels almost normal, like a normal part of my life. I can't seem to shift that thing at all. But your problem is smaller than this problem. This is a monster problem. You're going to die, Daniel, within 24 hours if you don't solve this problem. Who's praying for your problem? Who have you asked? You know what? I'm facing this deal at work. I really need someone to pray for me. Could you pray for me? Can't give you any details, but I just need you to pray. And I'll let you know in a week how it goes. I got this kind of deal going on with my finances. I'm trying to get a little business started. And could you pray for that? That the Lord will put his hand on that and bless that. You just need one person to start praying. Maybe two. Daniel had three. Get one or two praying. You just never know. Years ago, I awoke to the fact of the power of people's prayers. We would go regularly overseas to do missions work, India, Pakistan, Malaysia, Philippines, all through Africa. And regularly I'd go pretty well every year for a lot of years. And before I'd go, I'd get my itinerary, all my travel, preaching, training, pastors, doing everything. I get it all printed out, and I'd recruit about 20 to 30 people to pray. I'd send it to all my friends. I'd get people in our church, other pastor friends, say, hey, would you be praying for me? Here's a prayer request. Here's my itinerary. Just keep me held up before the Lord. And I'd go away, and we'd have a great trip. Things would do, be brilliant, it'd be awesome and everything. Come home and give people a report, and then they'd stop praying. I realized after a number of years, John, you're an idiot. Why don't you get people praying across your whole life regularly? So 22 years ago, my wife and I set up a little prayer team, just people that we trust, people who love us, people who hold confidence in. We give them prayer requests and say, can you pray for this, pray for that? I sent them a message this morning. We've got a WhatsApp group for them. I sent a message saying, hey, I'm preaching at C3 Fremantle and C3 Kwinana. I'm doing a double whopper this morning. Can you pray for me? Just pray for my preaching. Pray for the Lord to help us. And they come back immediately. One of my prayer guys came back and said, praying now. How good is that? People are praying. People have been praying for you today in this meeting, that my preaching would keep you awake. No, that the Lord had ministered to you today. How cool is that? And I remember over the years, a number of years going with this prayer team, and we got so many good answers to prayer, but there was a time when I said to my prayer team, I need you to pray about this thing. It's a little bit embarrassing, but I'll share it with you. I said, it's not big, but it's annoying. I said, I preach Sunday in church, and at the end of the preaching, I'll back away from the pulpit, I'll move back here, the band will sing a song, and I'll just stand there. And while I stand there, pretty well 3 out of 4 Sundays, I get this thought in my head, that wasn't really good. You didn't preach well today. I don't think that was that effective. You could have done better. It was all like 30 seconds of just negative blah, 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 blah in my head. And I'd step back, say, God bless you people, have a great week. And I'd go home and I'd forget about the incident. And what happened, just so regular. I just got so used to it, I forgot it was a problem. You can do that with problems. They can become like a pet. You know, here's my problem again. How are you? Let me feed you. Let me look after you. And I said, could you guys pray about this? Because it's kind of annoying. You know, because I'm sure every Sunday I don't preach a brilliant sermon, but it's not that bad every Sunday. You know, it's just in my head, is there a demon behind the drums or somewhere? Or what's going on? They said, sure, we'll pray about that. So next Sunday I finish preaching. I move back here. I've never had those thoughts ever since. How cool is that? And I thought, I should have asked them to do this years ago. Let's live with this problem. There is a humility involved when you go to someone and say, I've got a problem. I've got a challenge. I'd be as bold to say that sometimes the Lord withholds solutions to wait for us to be humble. And to go to someone and say, hey, could you pray? Who's praying for your problem? I'm going to challenge you over the next 48 hours to find one person to pray for your problem. It could be a family member. It could be even your kids. You know, sometimes I ask your little kids. You got little kids? Ask them. You know, pray for daddy. Daddy's kind of got some things at work he's working on. Can you pray for daddy? I mean, a little child's faith. The Lord's just going to give you an answer because the kid's so cute. He's going to go, oh, Lord, there you go. Bless you. Who's praying for your problem? Daniel begins to get these guys praying for his problem. Verse 19. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. And Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, and it's a beautiful prayer, it's a great prayer. I love this. He really worships like we did today. Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times. In fact, that's a word for someone here today. Wisdom and power belong to God. And God is a generous Father. He will give you wisdom. He will give you power to move through the situation. He will give you insight and revelation to get you the other side of that. That's a word for someone here today. Take that. Wisdom and power. You've given me wisdom and power. They belong to you. Where was I up to? There. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. There you go. The Lord is going to give you wisdom and power. And listen, look at this phrase here. You have made known to me what we asked of you. I'll read that again. You have made known to me what we asked of you, not what I asked. You see, there's something in the power of humility when you go to someone and say, here's the problem, please ask the Lord to help. I find when you do this, people generally say, yeah, no problem, I'll be praying for you. Thank you for asking me. It's an honor. And actually, I've got a problem. Would you mind praying for my problem? Of course, you're going to say, yeah, absolutely. You never know where this leads. You never know what dominoes fall over because you humble yourself enough to say, pray for my problem. You've made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. And then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon. His courage is huge. Said to him, don't execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king. I will interpret his dream for him. Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, I found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means. Then the king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven. There is a God in heaven. There's a God in heaven. As people of faith, our trust is not just in our own skills and abilities and capacity, and thankfully we've got those, but there's a God in heaven. There's a God in heaven who provides solutions. I'm preaching for myself happy today. This is just brilliant preaching, John. Thank you so much. Just encourage myself in the Lord. There is a God in heaven who reveals mystery. So he has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dreams and the visions that pass through your mind as you're lying in bed are these. And I won't read the rest of the chapter, but the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had is probably one of the greatest. I put it in the top five greatest Old Testament prophecies about the coming of Christ. He actually outlines in this dream the coming of the Medes and Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, and then the eternal kingdom of Jesus Christ, the rock carved without hands. It's a phenomenal, unbelievable revelation that Daniel gets and is able to give to the king and interpret it for the king as well. And here's the deal. God not only wants to solve your problem, God wants to bring a revelation and an insight to you in the midst of your problem. Your problem is not there just in life, so you can go, oh, I've got a problem, I've got to solve, I've got to fix. No, God wants to speak into your life through the problem. He wants to shape your life through that problem. He wants to make you into more the image of Christ, even using that problem. Can I have a couple of the guys to cover? Worship leader, what was your name again? Elta, can you come and help me here? Don't need you on the guitar yet. Young guy in the white T-shirt, could you come and help me? You look nice and strong as well. Come up here and help me. I want to show you something. Just stand on my shoulder there. Just press against my shoulder. What's your name?
Craig.
Glad to meet you, Craig. Shoulder against me. Yep. They're push into me. I want to show. I'm going to leave a picture with you. There is. It's go easy. I'm not too young. Yeah, no, it's okay. You can lean. You can lean in. I'm just kidding you. I am strong. This is not grey hair. This is platinum, folks. It's platinum class. In the New Testament, Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble. You will have problems. The Greek word is the Greek word philipsis, but this is a picture of the Greek word. You can push in. Yeah, push a bit harder. Go for it. Ooh, can feel this problem left and right. It's got me surrounded. The Greek word has this picture of a very narrow place where you're pressed in on both sides, like a ravine that you can hardly squeeze through, but it's like the problem's got you cornered. It's pressurizing you. It's kind of squeezing you and molding you. Jesus said, in this world, you're going to have this. You're going to have problems. You're going to have scenarios. Then you have a choice as a believer. Your choice is like, oh, get out of it. I'm not interested in that problem. That problem doesn't exist. I just deny it away. I just believe it away, and you do kind of rubbish stuff and just deny and forget it. And then you lose, because God has a purpose in the problem. He has a revelation, an insight into the problem. You can squeeze back in and you can say, Lord, thank you for this problem. Squeeze a bit harder. Thank you for this problem is bigger than me. Thank you that this problem is not bigger than you. Thank you that you solved Daniel's problem. You can solve my problem. And suddenly you start to get a bit of faith, and suddenly you start to see God. God, what do you want to do in this problem? What do you want to speak to me in this problem? God, I'm just going to stay in this problem until you kind of shape me into the person you want me to be. And I'm coming out the other side, and I'm a different person now. I'm actually saying, thank you, problem. Thank you, problem. You can thank these guys too. God bless you. Thanks, Craig. Good on you, mate. You actually come into a place where you say, Lord, that problem was horrible when I was in it. I felt the pain of it, but I've come out the other side different. I remember when our son was born, Luke, second child. First child, Aaron, was born a month premature, so that was a bit, you know, challenging. Second child, Luke, was born 2 months premature, and his life hung in the balance. He was in King Edward Hospital in Subiaco. He was in intensive care there. His lung collapsed, and for the first couple of weeks, his life was, is he going to live? Is he not going to live? And I remember then as a young man thinking, God, I've got a son, but I don't know if he's going to live. And I remember not being able to sleep very well. You don't, child's getting that scenario. And I remember pacing up and down in my lounge room one night, just saying, Lord, please. And I remember saying, his words came out of my mouth. And sometimes you say things that you know are not you. You know that they're inspired by God. And I said to the Lord in prayer, Lord, whether Luke lives or whether Luke dies, I will trust you. Whichever way this goes, you'll still, in my eyes, be a good God. You'll be fine. I'll be fine with you. You'll be fine with me. We're all good. I reckon that night was the night I discovered what it meant to trust God. Without that horrible problem, that revelation would not have been there. I always look back on that night as the night when I was probably a believer, about 10 years as a believer, but I reckon that's the night I really trusted God. The Lord, whichever way it goes. And my son turns 40 next year. He lived, he survived. Thank you, Lord. Blessed, very fortunate. And he's given me 2 grandsons. Even better. I've got 4 grandsons now. If I knew how good grandkids were, I would have skipped having kids. Just had grandkids. But God has a purpose in the problem. He has a revelation, insight, something he wants to give you in the midst of your problem. Why don't you close your eyes where you're sitting?